Well, good evening. I want to thank Scott and the elders for another opportunity to be in front of you this evening. See if I remember the buttons well enough. Tonight, I want to continue some of the thoughts that Scott has shared in the past few lessons he's given. I appreciate what he talked about this morning, the battle belonging to the Lord, and even last Sunday night, the fact that God is with us. And I appreciate Dwayne leading those songs that he did to get our minds focused on what God is doing in our world today. It's so easy to turn on the computer, to look at your phone, the TV, and just be completely heartbroken and frightened and scared. And Scott touched on a lot of this in his lesson, and this idea that our world is broken. There are hurting people, hurting other people, hurting each other because they are aimless and without direction. And it's enough to have some wondering, God, have you fallen asleep? Where are you? We have, from God's very word itself, confirmation that no, he does not sleep, in case you were wondering. But the fact is that he is awake and he is attentive to his whole creation, and the fact that he is a great provider for his creation and for his people. And so tonight I just want to reflect on this idea of God's role as the great provider. And a lot of it we'll talk about providence, and I'm going to be upfront with you at the beginning and say I don't know all there is to know about the providence of God or how it works or when it happens or exactly how God's thoughts and ways work, because they're higher than mine. But I'll share with you enough that I've studied from the scriptures to understand that providence is the way that God guides us through this life. And we understand that there is a general kind of providence that says there is air in this room, which means you can breathe or sigh if I say something silly. There's also the fact that you are in this room, right here, right now, for whatever reason. Whether God's providence is involved in that, that's a discussion to be had, certainly. But we got to understand that even when things look so bleak or things can be so discouraging, we have a great provider who fights for us, who gives us what we need if we just seek it. It's interesting when you think about the context of today's world and you think of a story like Esther's. You think of a nation, the Jewish nation, being in exile, and all of a sudden this decree goes out that all Jews are now subject to death. And you think, how could this sort of thing happen? In complete uncertainty and chaos, and in the midst of it is Mordecai, this man whose cousin has recently been appointed queen of all things to this foreign nation that they're exiled to. If you would open up to Esther chapter 4, these verses are the ones I think we all will be familiar with, if we're familiar with the book of Esther at all. But we come into the middle of this sort of political thriller, if you'll think of it that way with me for a moment, and understanding that Mordecai is distraught, the Jewish people are distraught, and here is Esther as the queen of this nation that's about to carry this out. And you read here that there's this back and forth when she understands that her cousin Mordecai is so distraught. And she starts sending some messengers back and forth trying to figure out, and he explains the situation and says, listen, you have to go to the king. You have to tell him not to let this happen. And Esther comes back to him through a messenger and says, listen, I just can't do that. Of course, I'm paraphrasing here. But the idea is that no one goes into the king unless they are summoned. And so if I go into the king, unless he extends me the courtesy of that golden scepter and spares me, the automatic sentence for that is death. And then Mordecai sends this message back, starting with verse 12 of Esther chapter 4. They told Mordecai what Esther had said. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not think of yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. And following that warning, he gives the verse that we all like to quote and put up on our walls. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knows? Who knows? In that one phrase, Mordecai essentially points to a curtain. And that's all he does. It's interesting to think, and I know a lot of people when they talk about Esther, they like to point out, God's never mentioned by name in the book of Esther. He's never pointed out specifically or specifically brought up. But if you think that God's not in the book of Esther, I would encourage you to keep looking because he's there. And I think this is obviously one of the verses that points that out, and certainly in other places. But the fact is that Mordecai is pointing out, listen, you are in a place of prevalence, of privilege. You have resources, you have gifts, you have an ability that no one else does. God could very well have you in this position for a reason. He is providing for his people, and you have a role to play. I love that Scott brought up this morning that God doesn't need us, but he wants us. As Mordecai pointed out, deliverance will arise from somewhere else, but you can play a role right now, is what he tells Esther. And that should be a huge encouragement to us, that if you're having a good day, if things are going well for you right now in life, you should be able to understand that God is so bountiful and good and gracious in what he gives. And the mindset should be, how can I give that back? How can I use those things to glorify my Father, to carry out his will? You think of this in comparison to Matthias over in the first chapter of Acts, and some people will say, who's Matthias? It's because he's only brought up once in Acts chapter 1, and he replaces Judas ultimately by the end of that chapter among the apostles. But if you turn over there, I encourage you to read the whole beginning of that chapter, just all the things that Peter says as he goes through this meeting. But verse 22 specifically points out this fact that the qualifications of who has to replace Judas is somebody who's been there this whole time, who's been prepared, who is ready to take on this role. Since the baptism of John, it'll say, up until he ascended, Matthias was ready to take up that role. Do you know what Matthias means in Hebrew? Gift of God. Sometimes God's providence is you. And it's me showing other people love in our lives because we have the patience, we have the kindness, we have the perspective, we have the experience, we have something that can be of benefit to that person, and we can share it with them and shine our lights from that privileged position, whether it is talents, whatever it may be. Who knows if God's not calling you to do something today as part of his providence? And they say, well, that's all well and good, but what if I haven't been positioned as a rank of queen in this hostile enemy land? What if actually my day's going pretty bad? What if things are falling apart around me and I find myself at a disadvantage or in a moment of weakness? Over in Paul's letter to Philemon, a very short letter here, but he addresses somebody who is in a very vulnerable stance, in a vulnerable position, if you'll think of it this way, because he's been wronged. He's had this slave run away, and Paul is writing this letter to encourage him and say, Onesimus, who was once a slave to you, is now going to return to you. Specifically here, in verse 12, Paul says, I am sending him, that is Onesimus, back to you, sending my very heart. I would have been glad to keep him with me in order that he might serve me on your behalf during my imprisonment for the gospel, but I preferred to do nothing without your consent in order that your goodness might not be by compulsion, but of your own accord. Verse 15, for this perhaps is why he was parted from you for a while, that you might have him back forever, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, as a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. Yes, this is an unfortunate circumstance, and it is an awkward situation, Philemon. But perhaps God meant it to happen this way. Perhaps this is an opportunity for you in your weakness to shine, to do something that is going to glorify God and strengthen the kingdom in the end. It is easy to view God as the great provider when we are surrounded by blessings. We have so many things we can be thankful for. But it just takes one little thing in our lives to make us think that everything is falling apart. And certainly there are the big things that we can get wrapped up in and certainly deserve some thought and attention, but not to the expense of forgetting that the same God who provided for Esther and her abundance is the same God that's going to provide for Philemon in his moment of weakness. Think of James 1:17. It talks about every good gift and every perfect gift coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. God gives good gifts. But here's where I think a lot of times when we talk about providence, we get distracted. Because when we talk about God's providence, we talk about the every good and perfect gift, which is fine. But how often do we sit and reflect on really the crux of James 1:17 is the fact of God's character? Who do we care? What are we fixating on more? The providence itself? How are you going to fix this, God? Or the fact that God is a provider? Paul will tell the Philippians in the fourth chapter there in verse 19, my God will supply every need of yours. And certainly the Philippians struggled with some things, so it doesn't mean that they're on a cakewalk. But God is there for you, even in your moments of weakness. Paul knew this better than most, and that's why he can write it to Philemon. You look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verses 11 and 12, towards the end of chapter 11, Paul is talking about all these things that he's gone through. If you are having a bad day, by the way, I encourage you to look at this list at the end of 2 Corinthians 11, because it'll give you a quick reality check of the things you could be going through that Paul lists out here. He talks about being stoned and beaten with rods, 40 lashes in 5 different occasions, he mentions, less one, that is. Always in danger, in the wilderness, at sea, from false brothers, and he worries about the churches and all these different things. And then he says something interesting in verse 30. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that will show my weakness. When was the last time you boasted about your weakness? I would imagine, for most of us, the answer is similar to mine, which is not often enough. Because I like to preserve myself as much as I can. I like to try to keep myself protected. I don't like to admit when I'm struggling in something. Paul says, though, boast in your weaknesses. Why, Paul? He goes on into the next chapter carrying that same thought over, and he talks about this thorn in the flesh that he has, starting with verse 7 of chapter 12, 2 Corinthians. So to keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. You take that list that Paul has there in that last verse we just read. Weaknesses, insults, hardships. Can we all agree that some of us have at least some of those things in our lives? Perhaps right now, perhaps in the past, you're going to have them again. Paul says, don't view those things as reasons to question God. View them as opportunities for God's providence to shine through. If you are down in the valley and you believe that God is the great provider, prove it. Shine a light in that dark valley. Because I'll tell you, it'll get people's attentions real quick. Because people down in the valley aren't supposed to, by the world standards, have peace that passes all understanding. Have joy indescribable. Have a hope of heaven. And so it's very apparent, and it's a very quick way to talk to somebody, to lead somebody to the ultimate light. So how do we do this? What is the real crux of all this? And it's this attitude that I think underlines all these things, from Esther to how Philemon will respond. And we see this attitude over in Genesis, the 24th chapter, if you'll turn with me there for one more account. As we talk about God's providence, you might think it's interesting that we discuss the account of one of Abraham's servants searching for a bride for his son Isaac. But there's some interesting things that happen in the story that I just want to draw our attention to for a moment as we consider this idea of how we view God's providence, even when we don't understand it, by understanding who he is. In Genesis chapter 24, beginning at the first verse, "Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And he said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, 'Put your hand under my thigh, that I may swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but will go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac.' The servant said to him, 'Perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I then take your son back to the land from which you came?' Abraham said to him, 'See to it that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, to your offspring I will give this land, he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there.'" And so Abraham gives the servant this promise. He gives him a mission, and he gives him a promise. Do this thing, and God's going to help you. God will guide you. God will give an angel to lead you in that way. You read on through the account, and you got to understand, when he makes that point of the servant being the head and in charge of all his household, this is a guy who Abraham will leave some decision-making up to. And so the temptation might be, as the servant's out on his own, that he has a choice. Am I going to follow my gut, my best decision-making facilities that he's used to manage Abraham's household, or am I going to follow God and how my master's explained it to me? If you read there in Genesis chapter 4, we won't go through all the details. There's some camels that get a drink of water. It's really quite fascinating. But there's the sign that but ultimately, I'll draw your attention to the fact that the servant prays to God. He's focused on God. He doesn't say, okay, well, she's pretty enough, or, oh, that guy looks like he might be related to my master in some way. He prays to God, and he said, all right, God, I'm going to do this your way. Here's how I'm going to know who you're trying to guide me to. He gets to this point where he meets the girl. The thing happens that it's described. And in verse 26, after this, as she's still standing there, she says the words that fulfill this servant's notion of understanding that this is the one. In verse 26, "The man bowed his head and worshiped the Lord, and he said, 'Blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness toward my master. As for me, the Lord has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsmen.' Then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things." The servant will go on to Rebekah's relative here, Laban, and recount the story basically for him in understanding. And he again brings up this angel that Abraham promises in verse 40, and then he'll again say, "The Lord has led me in the right way," in verse 48. I might have skimmed through it a little bit too quickly, but can somebody tell me where the angel came into play? Because I don't see an angel specifically mentioned in those verses. He's not addressed. It doesn't say, and the servant looked up, and the angel was over the shoulder of Rebekah saying, this one, her. That's not how it worked. See, sometimes it's in those simple things. And we get upset when our life looks more like the book of Esther or Ruth than it does look like the book of Exodus, because there's not some big, grandiose way that God's saving the day or providing for us. This, I think, is just such a beautiful picture of when somebody decides to follow God, that they benefit from his providence. Even though they don't see it with a physical eye, though they don't understand it. I have no doubt that the angel was there, by the way. The servant just doesn't understand fully what's going on. I believe that's part of the mystery of God's providence. But again, our focus isn't necessarily the providence itself. It's who God is, the great provider. So as you're going through life, what's your attitude? You have that same choice, really, that the servant did. I'm out here on my own versus God goes with me. I need to make these decisions and focus on how I'm going to advance myself versus the Lord has led me. We all have God-given roles and missions in this life, just like the servant had his mission. So the question is, who am I going to follow in that mission? Who am I going to lean on to guide me through that? Who's calling the shots in worship and how we worship the Lord? Who's calling the shots on how I manage my family, of how I deal with finances, of how what things I take in for entertainment, about all these different things that we can get wrapped up in? How am I going to take care of tomorrow? I don't know. And sometimes that's the hardest thing to admit. I personally do not know what I need, how I'm going to accomplish some things in this life, but I know who does. I know that the Lord is a great provider, and if I follow him, if I'm committed to him, if I love him and serve him with my whole heart and strive to do so more and more each day, he'll provide. Maybe not in the way that I expect, but he'll provide. God, like Abraham, doesn't give us a command without a promise. And ultimately, the greatest thing that God can provide, he already has. It's himself. Over in Matthew 28, where the Great Commission is given by Christ, it's said here by Christ that all authority has been given to him on heaven and on earth, and he says in verse 19, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." Yes, you have a mission, and my providence is myself. Again, I don't fully grasp, I don't think, what that statement means, but it sure does give me peace. That the one who walked on water, that the one who was raised from the dead, the very Son of God has promised me himself to help me. You ever think of this as providence? The Word? God has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness. He is a great provider. He is the great provider. Sometimes we need help just stepping back to see the big picture, to realize that there is a curtain and we don't know what's going on behind it, because we get so fixated on this physical life. And we need to encourage one another. And we need to help one another in keeping that perspective. Esther needed Mordecai to understand that there was a bigger plan in place. Philemon needed Paul's letter to understand that this isn't just about physical relationships anymore, it's about spiritual relationships. And the servant needed his master Abraham's promise that he would have confidence to go forward and trust in the Lord, that he'd be able to accomplish what he'd set out to do. The Lord has led me. That should be all of our desires. It's what we want to accomplish. And hopefully you realize that this message is not something that you've either written down or jogged away and saved for later. Providence is happening all around us. Somehow it's happening right now. Again, I don't understand how, but if you are having a good day, if you're having a bad day, if you're in a rut, if you're in a weird mood, if you just don't know, God's providing for you. And he will lead you. And you can boldly and confidently say that the Lord has led me. The question is, are you going to follow? God wants to provide for you so much. And he's given this incredible promise in Romans 8 and 28 and 29. Again, all things work together for the good of those who love him. God will make it right in the end. Again, maybe not the way that we expect it, but if we love him and we are dedicating our lives to him, we can have that peace and that hope. The fact that God has providence in this life, though, does not mean that we don't have free will. He gives us so much, but we still have choices to make, just like that servant did. How are you this evening?
Fine.
Really? Would you tell me if you weren't? Again, there's a difference between their air being in this room and the fact that you are in this room. If there is something weighing on your heart, let us know. Talk to somebody before you leave this place. If you need the prayers of your brothers and sisters here, ask. If you just have questions in general, let someone know. Let us know. This is the only way we're going to help each other, whether we're going through a high or a low in this life, and help each other remember who is behind that curtain. It's not the Wizard of Oz. It is the Great Provider. If you need to obey the gospel, now's the perfect time to do that. He has provided everything that you could possibly need. It's up to you, though. It's your choice if you're going to bury that old man and be raised to walk up in newness of life. Confess him as your Lord. Repent of that old way of living and die to yourself that you might live to him. If there's anything we can do for you this evening, we ask that you come forward as we stand and sing.